People ask the way to Cold Mountain. Cold Mountain? There is no road that goes through. Even in summer, the ice doesn't melt. Though the sun comes out, the fog is blinding. How can you hope to go there by aping me? Your heart and mine are not alike. If your heart were the same as mine, then you could journey to the very center. I'm Sean. Welcome to this week's episode of Warfare, Advancement, Revisionism. My name is Preston Floyd, and as always, I'm your host. I'd like to thank you all for joining me this week. I appreciate it. I'm very happy at how well received the last episode was, and I hope that this one is likewise well received. This week we'll be going over the changes happening to human life in Central Asia, or specifically what would today be the far east of Iran, eastern portion of Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, southeast of Uzbekistan, southwest of Kyrgyzstan, and western Tajikistan. Essentially the same parts of Central Asia outside the eastern Eurasian steppe between 6 and 4000 BC. Though some of what I'll be talking about will be happening in the rest of those parts of Central Asia that I'm not going to be specifically going over this episode. Though, well, we will probably be covering parts of them in the future this season. But essentially, last season, we saw the arrival of herding in the region, and to a much lesser extent, agriculture. This is only really practiced, though, in a few locations near stable water sources, and there is a question of how much attention they really paid to this type of agriculture. This could have been similar. It could have been a case similar to where they were planting crops in areas they planned to return to later, and didn't really stay and manage your fields too heavily. Kind of a case of more agriculture than horticulture. Or excuse me, more of a case of horticulture than agriculture. Or that agriculture was just kind of a supplement to their other food sources. Similar to those societies that first domesticated crops. This is going to remain the case in the region for quite a while. Agriculture will spread and become more important generally, but by and large, herding, nomadic pastoralism, and even hunting will remain the primary, or at least the most practical mode of life here. Hunter-gathering will also remain viable here, at least in small numbers in a few places. And this is going to be the case until the modern era. That is not to say, though, that there are no permanent or semi-permanent sites. I think I went over this last season, but when Kabul, which is now the capital of Afghanistan, was first founded, it's a little bit of a mystery. But it has been inhabited since at least 1500 BC, and probably much longer than that. The Kabul River and a settlement known as Kuba on the river is mentioned in both the Avesta and one of the Vedas. I think it's the Rig Veda. And these are holy scriptures slash books in two different religions. The Avesta is the primary text of Zoroastrianism, and the Rig Veda is one of the big Hindu texts that will crop up over time. But the Avesta was first written down around 1500 BC, and the Vedas could have been written as early as 2000 BC. But of course, as we'll go over in later parts of the show, it's very likely that they were at least orally transmitted centuries before these periods. Now, of course, there's always a possibility that these were later additions, but it's highly likely that even if Kabul itself wasn't occupied, several places along the river itself would be a great site for humans of all stripes and lifestyles, at least in the summer, which is when the melting snows of the Hindu Kush caused it to bring large amounts of water, leading to growth of plants and things like that, and also cooling people and animals, at least in the summer months. The rest of the year, this kind of river valley would have a fairly weaker flow, which again kind of lends to the idea that you would only be around the river for a portion of the year. When the river had a lower discharge, most people would probably leave the sites around the river directly to drive their herds to more viable land. The weaker river probably helped your journey. And the Kabul runs around 435 miles, which is around 700 kilometers, that you could take your herd up or down the river as needed. Basically letting them drink and eat for a few months before going, you know, before you went back to a traditional camp or village site where you would reconnect with family who are maybe are living in one place due to age, infirmity, having extremely young children, etc., things like that. Then the river floods again and you go back the way you came once its flow starts to retreat again. This type of pattern wouldn't just be happening along the Kabul River, of course. There are a number of rivers and streams coming down from the various mountain ranges bordering Central Asia. Things like the Tian Shan, the Pamir, the Hindu Kush, the Kulun, the Karakoram, the Himalayas, and of course the Tibetan Plateau proper. One of these is the Kofar Nihon, or the Kafir Nigan. The name Kofar Nihon comes from, I think it's Middle Persian, the Kafir Nihon, which is literally means the hidden infidel, though it's usually translated as where the infidels hide. And the Kofar Nihon is a major tributary of the Amu Darya, or the Oxus River, which we'll discuss a little bit later. And it flows around 240 miles or 390 kilometers southwest down from the Hisar range of the Pamir Mountains. And that as it goes through that direction, it runs into other streams and rivers. Numerous sites kind of emerged in the passes and valleys that these rivers pass through. These sites would serve as semi-permanent, possibly permanent settlements. And of course, one of these is actually located around what is now the modern capital of Tajikistan, the city of Dushanbe. And this means Monday in the Tajik dialect of Persian. I think the modern primary dialect of Persian, it would be something like Dushanba. And it was adopted by some of the neighboring Turkic languages like Uzbek. And the name comes from a bazaar that would assemble there on Mondays. And over time, you know, the site sees more traffic. And the bazaar basically never closed. And it would eventually continue and become a town that grew from there. Though, when this happened isn't known. The earliest a town is mentioned in written records is the 1600s AD, but we know the site was in use during, you know, parts of this season, and the whole valley will be occupied eventually towards the end of or the very start of what will become the next season by a number of material cultures. And these river valleys will be the centers of numerous material cultures and then later what we would consider civilizations. The most famous valley in the region is probably the Fergana Valley, and this is also occupied by a number of nomadic pastoralists and hunter-gatherers, and that is probably, it's definitely true of this time as well. And this valley will serve as a major route of migration and trade in the overall Central Asian region. Most of these valleys have sites around them, and most of these sites and ones like them are occupied by a wide mix of peoples, some of which are indigenous, some from neighboring places that we have talked about this season already, like the Zagros Mountains, the Jetun culture, and by peoples we will be discussing in future episodes this season, like peoples from the Tibetan Plateau and the Indian subcontinent, or mixes of these various groups. Now, they don't appear to have established distinct identities at this period. However, there is one specific material culture spread over a portion of Central Asia this season that I should bring up and talk about. And unlike these smaller and wider spread sites and peoples, they did not practice agriculture, and they don't adopt herding until the very end of this season. And this is the Keltaminar culture. And this name comes from the initial type site, Keltaminar, which unfortunately I could find no etymological breakdown for. But essentially, they lived between the western banks of the Caspian Sea and the southern portion of the Aral Sea and the kind of the arid desert region to the south of both of these bodies of water, and along the Amu Darya and other kind of rivers and deltas that are feeding into the Aral Sea directly. Now, these people, were primarily hunter-gatherer slash fishers. At the start of our season, so right around 6000 BC, they had probably been living along the Hisar Valley, where currently Dushanbe will exist. And the earliest version of their artifacts are found there. They're very rough, flint arrowheads, things like that, very rudimentary pottery. But over the next 500 years or so, they moved down the Sir Darya, following it northeast to what is now to what we now call the Aral Sea, where they moved eventually to the southern shore of that body and spread out from there. So by 5500 BC / BCE, depending on what calendar you'd like to use, they had set up a number of settlements in this general area. Now, why this migration happened, we're not very sure. It could have been a repeat of older migration patterns that we don't have records of. It could have been related to a climate shift, or they may have just been driven out by the arrival of pastoralists or agricultural groups, or a combination of any of these causes. they fished extensively, and they ate shellfish like mussels, shrimp, of course, just standard fish as well. And they also hunted wild game, things like wild deer, wild camels, waterfowl, wild onagers, horses, things like that. We also know that they kept dogs, some of which appear to have been eaten at various times, if perhaps food, more wild food sources weren't available. We also know they had bows. Again, flint arrowheads are a big part of their kind of toolkit. We also know that they made their own pottery. They also lived in large, singular houses with extended family groups. Their homes, for lack of a better term, were very large. They had conical, almost shaped roofs with made out of wood, wattle, and daub, and sunken floors. They would dig out the floors and kind of build them, build up the edges of the flooring with mud and things like that. These were on average between 79 feet long, 56 feet wide, with ceilings that could reach up to about 32 feet high. And of course, with the sunken floors, this would give you even more ceiling clearage. In terms of metric, I think that's like 24 meters by 17 meters and 10 meters high. And these, at minimum, could have housed around 100 people, though in extreme circumstances, they could have had a couple of dozen more than that. Now, there isn't any real evidence of a stratified society, though they did make jewelry and decorative items out of various types of shells and things like that along the seas that they were based around. And these people were mostly sedentary, though probably portions of their populations were usually out on hunts and or gathering parties for periods of the year when others, of course, were staying at the homesteads to maintain their various fishing projects. Now, this culture will maintain this lifestyle pretty much uninterrupted till around 4000 BC, BCE, where they begin to adopt more and more animal herding practices. And this is probably due to them having more access to herds from their neighbors through either trade or raiding. However, that and other factors should hint that these people are getting closer to their heartland. And when we return to the region next season, we will see this material culture begin to decline and then ultimately disappear from the archaeological record. Though again, we're mostly going to focus on that when we get here again next season. Now, there are theories about the Keltiminar people's, I guess, their language and relatives. There are those that, due to the layout of their homes, pottery style, their continuation of kind of a hunter and gathering type of lifestyle, their geography, and other factors, essentially, think that they're related to the comb ceramic culture of Europe. And we will cover these people later this season. But this culture is believed by some to have spoken a Proto-Ugaric language, or Uralic language. That's the actual term, excuse me. Not Ugaric, Uralic. These are separate things. Essentially, though, it's thought that these are peoples who the original Uralic speakers broke off from. Whereas these people maintain kind of a homeland around the Aral and Caspian Seas,
their cousins, the proto-Uralic speakers, kind of continue moving to the northwest into closer to Europe. The southern Urals that the people of the Celtimar, they kind of stay around the Aral and Caspian Seas. So this is possibly an early split of the Proto-Uralic speakers. Now, I should point out that this is just a theory. It's not accepted by most people, mainly because linguistics are very hard to pin down, and the Uralic languages are something of a controversy. Not necessarily, controversy might be too strong of a word. Essentially, there's a little bit of a debate about when this this language family emerged. You also have a tendency to misidentify Uralic along with Finno-Uralic, which is a branch of Uralic, which is a whole other thing. And we'll deal with that more when we talk about other parts of the Northern Eurasian Steppe and things like that. And the, of course, the comb culture of Europe. But this culture, it's possible they spoke a protoform of Uralic, essentially before the Uralic peoples moved into the Ural Mountain ranges, which is the more one of the more popular theories of the Uralic homeland. It's a very complicated thing. It's kind of tough to touch on at this stage, but we'll talk about that more later. But to kind of simplify, essentially, what may have happened is the people who spoke Proto-Uralic, they may have broken off from this culture, you know, instead of continuing along the Aral Sea, some of them may have continued further to the northwest, essentially, and settled around the Ural Mountains, where they, you know, divided again eventually to form the various branches of the Uralic language family. But again, all theories, it's hard to substantiate that. But again, it's a working theory. People are obviously, especially, you know, at this time period where there's no real written records, it's hard to really know for sure. But just keep that in mind as we go forward. Now, again, we will return to these people later as they transition out of this material culture to others. But that is kind of the big one, or I should say the firm material culture in the region for this season. Now, there's another thing I'm going to touch on, and that is religion. Because agriculture does not kind of really take root here until much later, there isn't so much, at least there's no record of any type of goddess worship or god worship, really. They continue to practice things like worship of, or at least the theory is that they take part in the worship of spirits. Possibly of ancestors, but definitely of animals. And this is kind of like a early extension that will become shamanism. And this takes place all along the steppe and the rest of Eurasia, kind of northern Eurasia, I should say. But the region as a whole will be very open and receptive to a number of religions that come through at later periods. But probably the humans living here during this period of our timeline, they are not, you know, beginning the worship of gods, but they're more in line with the continuing more traditional human practices that we talked about in earlier episodes of, you know, certain individuals kind of being mediums between the conscious world and the spirit world and or the animal plane. And these people are, of course, trying to bridge this gap and trying to connect people in the here, or well, in the then and now, with more abstract parts of existence. Spirit world, the afterlife, whatever you want to call it. And shamanism, in one form or another, will continue in this area until the modern day. Even after, you know, more mainstream religions enter the region, there's a lot of local flavor. And this is something that's going to continue, again, all throughout recorded history of a number of different religious faiths. And not just the Abrahamic faiths. You know, Hinduism, Buddhism, they enter the region too. And they leave their own marks, which of course is stuff we'll talk about much later. But yeah, so that's kind of where we are for this region of the world for this season. Unfortunately, again, there's not a whole lot to dive into super in-depth just yet. That will come about later. Yeah, so I think that's kind of going to tie up these sections of Central Asia for this season. There are other parts of Central Asia that are probably more in line with developments further both west and east, places that are now what we would consider Kazakhstan, which I haven't really brought into this episode, but who are, you know, happening at roughly the same time. But that's all stuff we're going to cover in future parts of this season. We will be moving into the Indian subcontinent for the next episode, I believe. There might be some follow-up on this part of Central Asia, but that's stuff for me to figure out. But anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Sorry it was a little bit rougher. I have been traveling. I am recording this much later than normal. This episode will probably be coming out a little bit later than normal. Yeah. I appreciate you guys for showing up. I hope you've enjoyed. If you have any constructive criticism, feedback, things like that, please let me know. You can reach me at war@revpod@gmail.com. You can comment on the YouTube video itself. You can send me a direct message on X/Twitter. A little bit longer episode from last week, but generally shorter than what I like. But you guys seem to enjoy the shorter episode for last week, so I hope that this kind of continues that trend. You know, shorter or longer, just let me know what you think. And yeah, I look forward to, you know, returning regularly, or regular time, I should say. But yeah, please let me know. And if you have any questions, again, please reach out on any of those feeds. Spotify, you can comment there. It may take me a little while to get, actually respond to those comments there, but I will do so. Sometimes I don't get notifications immediately. Sometimes it'll be delayed, but yeah. I'm really looking forward to hearing back from you all about this episode. So, we'll see everyone next week. Where the episode will come out at the regular time. But until then, I hope you all have a good rest of your week here and day whenever you're listening to this. And I'll see everyone next time. Peace.